Blog Talk Radio.
Quick trivia question. Name that TV theme song. You're not going to, but you know, I'm going to give you a shot. We'll go a little while. James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Kind of like a special, well, we're live every, and when we're on Blog Talk, we're live. That's all there. So, but we're kind of special broadcast tonight. There's a lot of exciting things happening in Washington, and we're going to talk about some of it. We're going to start off with this. As they began the vote count and certification in Congress today, here's how it started. It was Representative Paul Gosar from A for Arizona.
Mr. President, the certificate of the electoral vote of the state of Arizona seems to be regular in form and authentic, and it appears therefrom that Joseph R. Biden Jr. of the state of Delaware received 11 votes for president, and Kamala D. Harris of the state of California received 11 votes for vice president.
Are there any objections to counting the certificate of vote of the state of Arizona that the teller has verified appears to be regular in form and authentic?
President, I, Paul Gosar from Arizona.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Arizona rise?
I rise for myself and 60 of my colleagues to object to the counting of the electoral ballots from Arizona.
Is the objection in writing and signed by a senator?
Yes, it is.
It is.
An objection presented in writing and signed by both a representative and a senator complies with the law, Chapter 1 of Title 3 of the United States Code. The clerk will report the objection.
Objection to counting the electoral votes of the state of Arizona. We, a member of the House of Representatives and a United States Senator, object to the counting of the electoral votes of the state of Arizona on the ground that they were not, under all of the known circumstances, regularly given.
Are there further objections to the certificates from the state of Arizona? The chair hears none. The two houses will withdraw from joint session. Each house will deliberate separately on the pending objection and report its decision back to the joint session. The Senate will now retire to its chamber.
Okay. Now, last week, Let me check some volumes here, man. Okay. Last week. Senator Josh Hawley made known his intentions to object. Now, why was Senator Hawley going to do that? Well, we know why the hell he's going to do that, because the election was stolen. It was rigged. It was dirty. There's plenty of evidence to see it. Mitch McConnell says, well, we don't think it's a good idea for anybody to come on and object to what's going on in the Senate because, well, it's a, I don't even know what the hell that means. But basically, he was like, no, you don't need to be objecting. We need to just go ahead and rubber stamp this thing because we're a bunch of pussies. I'm sorry, can you say rubber stamp on the? I think you can. Anyway, so then we find out over the weekend that there, you know, there's a whole boatload of House representatives, Republican House representatives. Yeah, we're gonna object. We're gonna object like hell. And so then McConnell says, in a and here's what cracks me up is how these how in the hell do these stupid SOBs get so damn rich? Here, there's a Zoom call. Last week, Josh Hawley says, Senator Hawley says, I'm objecting because this is crooked and I'm, by God, that I'm, no, I'm objecting. It may not mean anything. It may not have any other significance other than me objecting, but by God, it'll begin the record that at least one dude said, hey, you know what? I think this thing stinks and I think we need to check it out. Whether you do or not, there it is. So kudos to Senator Hawley for having a decent sized set of stones. They're on a Zoom conference call. Last Friday, they're on this conference call, and McConnell's he's ticked because Hawley's move is emboldening other senators. Ted Cruz, watch Ted Cruz, okay? I know. Just keep your eye on him, okay? Just keep your eye on him. So Ted Cruz gets in on the act. Because after immolating himself at the convention in 2016, he has absolutely no political cred whatsoever. He has no friends as a Republican because he's such a stooge, a remarkably bright stooge and an articulate stooge, but a stooge nonetheless. So he gets in on the act. But during this call, Mitch McConnell is raising up Santa. You know, oh, yeah, well, we're still trying to juggle a little. What do you know? And Josh Hawley doesn't say anything.
Sir, how long is it going to object?
Senator Hawley didn't say anything. Well, McConnell's getting ticked off. Hawley wasn't even on the call. He was off doing something. He wasn't even in on a conference call. And all these other fools, these stooges, these uniparty members in Republican guise, they don't even know who the hell's in the meeting. The Senate Majority Leader.
Well, it moves McConnell.
I know, Gary. I know. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said it, but you know how I get. My buddy Gary Benford, if he is available and I do a show, I know I can count on him. He's going to be right there with me as my wingman in the inbox. He just sent me a picture of a cat, little kitty cat with one of those pink vaginal helmets on because I said rubber stamp. And so then he backtracks because he sees Trump supporters are watching this and they go, what do you mean don't object? There's fundamentally a Niagara Falls cascade of evidence of chicanery, of skullduggery, of rhubarbery. And you're telling these guys to keep their mouths shut in the name of what? Being good sports? And just a quick heads up, Mitch McConnell was also prominently written about in Pete Schweitzer's book, Secret Empires. He's married to Margaret Chow. Margaret Chow's father owns a Pacific shipping company that is basically the Chinese communist government's officially sanctioned shipping corporation. So if it's leaving China and it's going anywhere out to the Pacific Rim across here to the United States, it's going to be on one of these boats, that the ships that belongs to Margaret Chow's father. They are gazillionaires with Chinese communist money. Mitch McConnell's not a good guy. Mitch McConnell's not one of us. He's one of them. He's Hydra. He's Hydra all the way. So he says,
you know, you guys better come Donald Jack. And then he goes, well, I'm not going to get in the way of anybody. You know, nobody's going to get so, and so nobody's, he's not going to get in the way of anybody objecting.
Then today, as things are opening up, and this is about an 8-minute clip, and we need to hear all of it from this treasonous bastard. Let me find it here. Okay, here it is. Here it is. Yeah, I have it under the McConnell treason. Here we go.
Mr. President.
Majority Leader.
We're debating a step
blah, blah, blah.
That has never been taken
blah, blah, blah,
in American
blah, blah.
History.
Blah, blah, blah.
Whether Congress should overrule the voters and overturn a presidential election. I've served 36 years in the Senate. This will be the most important vote I've ever cast. President Trump claims the election was stolen. The assertions range from specific local allegations to constitutional arguments to sweeping conspiracy theories. I supported the president's right to use the legal system. Dozens of lawsuits, received hearings in courtrooms all across our country. But over and over, the courts rejected these claims, including all-star judges whom the president himself has nominated. Every election, we know, features some illegality and irregularity, and of course, that's unacceptable. I support strong state-led voting reforms. Last year's bizarre pandemic procedures must not become the new norm. But my colleagues, nothing before us proves illegality anywhere near the massive scale that would have tipped the entire election. Nor can public doubt alone justify a radical break when the doubt itself was incited without any evidence. The Constitution gives us here in Congress a limited role.
I'm sorry, did he
we
say no evidence?
Declare ourselves he did. National Board of Elections on steroids. The voters, the courts, and the states have all spoken. They've all spoken. If we overrule them, it would damage our republic forever.
Yeah, we don't have anything to worry about now.
It's not unusually close.
Blah, 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 blah.
Just in recent history, 1976, 2000, and 2004 were all closer than this one. The Electoral College margin is almost identical to what it was in 2016. If this election were overturned by mere allegations from the losing side, our
mere
democracy
allegations
would enter a death spiral.
As opposed to the nosedive we're in now.
An election again.
Mother of pearl.
Every 4 years would be a scramble for power at any cost.
You mean there's not? Democrats have been working that way for a generation, Mitch.
Which most of us on this side have been defending for years, would cease to exist.
Well, no more effective than you are. Why not?
Leaving many of our states
better off
with no real say at all in choosing a president.
Oh, my God.
The effects would go
like
even
we gotta
beyond
say now?
The elections themselves. Self-government, my colleagues, requires a shared commitment to the truth and a shared respect for the ground rules of our system. We cannot keep drifting apart into two separate tribes with a separate set of facts and separate realities, with nothing in common except our hostility towards each other and mistrust for the few national institutions that we all still share.
Well, it's because they betrayed that trust, Mitch.
Every time. In the last
every
30
time,
years,
you take their
the
spot.
Democrats have lost the presidential race. They've tried a challenge just like this. After 2000, after 2004, after 2016. After 2004, a senator joined and forced the same debate. And believe it or not, Democrats like Harry Reid, Dick Durbin, and Hillary Clinton praised them and applauded the stunt.
The unholy trio in one in the same
those
sentence.
Those efforts back then. And we just spent 4 years condemning Democrats' shameful attacks on the validity of President Trump's own election.
And you don't have the stones to defend
his
re-election.
There can be no double standard.
You know, standards at all,
Mitch. Outraged today, spent 4 years aiding and abetting Democrats' attacks on our institutions after they lost. But we must
talking
not
about the media?
Imitate and escalate what we repudiate.
You're a pussy, dude.
Our duty is to govern for the public good. United States Senate has a higher calling than an endless
yeah, there are trillions at stake,
of partisan
aren't there?
Vengeance.
And you don't want to miss out on it.
Congress will either override the voters, overrule them, the voters, the states, and the courts for the first time ever, or honor the people's decision. We'll
the
either guarantee
people?
Democrats delegitimizing
the people who weren't allowed to vote, people,
the
criminals, the convicts,
new
people,
routine for both sides,
the people that were 120 years old
or
and older.
That our nation deserves a lot better than this. We'll either hasten down a poisonous path where only the winners of election actually accept the results, or show we can still muster the patriotic courage that our forebears showed not only in victory but in defeat.
Why do you cats embrace defeat, man?
Short-term passions from boiling over and melting the foundation.
So we're
going to
stand
republic.
Here and let the long-term damage be done.
So I believe protecting our constitutional order requires respecting the limits of our own power. It would be unfair and wrong to disenfranchise American voters and overrule the courts and the states on this extraordinarily thin basis.
Okay, that's you get the okay. That dude's on our side. I don't know if you knew that or not, but Mitch McConnell's a Republican. He's supposed to be one of us. God. Think. Okay, seriously, he's supposed to be on our side. He is supposed to be one of us. Mitch McConnell, old boy from Kentucky. Patrick Jones. So really, you know, and we've got, I don't think they have any estimates yet. They might, I don't know. What the heck? They may have them. I'm not really sure yet. As to how many people were in D.C. today to support the president. I mean, it was fat. You've seen the pictures. They're undeniable. Do I say hundreds of thousands? Yeah, probably. I'm not exactly sure. But, you know, every place I looked, it was insane with people. Here's the clip. Here's what happened earlier today this afternoon, actually. Okay, and it was like that basically all over town. Now, excuse me. If you tuned in last night, and this is so great. Last night we had a terrific guest. Our friend Hal Morose was with us last night, giving us his boots on the ground perspective of what was going on in Georgia. And one of the things that we discussed was the Reichstag fire, or I talked about it before the judge came on at some point in the show. We talked about the Reichstag fire, and the Reichstag building was the building where the members of Germany's legislative bodies met. Kind of like the House of Representatives of Congress. Well, one night in 1938, it catches fire, and it burns almost to the ground. It's a big deal. Just imagine if our House of Representatives, you know, caught fire. Some miscreants came in there and tried to burn it down. Big deal. Well, they have this guy. He's a patsy. He's from Poland. He's a communist shill. You know, he was useful fodder for the communists. He was some kind of weak-minded dude, and so they rig him up as a communist, and they say, "See, this is what's going on. These damn communists, they're trying to destroy our way of life." And the only political party here in Germany who has the strength and the wherewithal to stand up to communism and push back against that is the Nazi Party. Now, the reason I bring that up, and the Nazis did this. The Nazis burned the damn Reichstag building down, and then they used this guy, you know, this stooge. He was their fall guy, and it brought them, you know, it brought them a majority in the parliament. They took over. Well, it didn't bring them a majority, but they were able to accede power. And we talked about that last night. I think me and Hal did. But anyway, I right here before the show, just minutes before the show, I got an email that I was talking with Hal Morose about what's going on. Now, there have been some incidents of violence, and we're going to address that too in a minute. There have been some incidents of violence in D.C. There's been some conflict with law enforcement. Some woman inside the house got shot. She got shot in the neck, and she's in bad shape in one of the local hospitals. I haven't heard anything about it beyond that, but we don't know anything more. I'll try and find out. And on the news tonight, I was listening. I think it was Fox. It doesn't matter. They're all the same now. And they're talking about the fact that, you know, these people were rowdy enough to the point where tear gas had to be deployed. Looks like the lady died. I just got something from the board up here. She just inboxed me. So she didn't survive. She was taken to the hospital where obviously she died. So somebody's been killed. Now, back to the Reichstag and where I'm going with this. I was talking with Hal Moreau's and I was looking at this violence that was going on, and I emailed him and I said, how much do you want to bet that the troublemakers that are instigating this violence are predominantly not our people? And when I say our people, I'm talking you and me, because that's not what we do. That's not what we're about. Remember the Tea Party? Remember the Tea Party? Tens and thousands of them got together. There wasn't any violence. Hell, there wasn't any litter, for crying out loud. Take a look at Occupy Wall Street. Take a look at Antifa. Take a look at BLM. Look at all the MAGA rallies that happened, not just during the campaign, but over the last 4 years. What incidents happened beyond Trump supporters getting beat up by Antifa and BLM? Nothing. That's why I'm very dubious of these claims. Well, what they're doing is they're taking these acts of violence and they're associating them with Trump people, because that, you know, that's all who's there. So I talk about the Reichstag fire last night. Hal and I are talking just before I go on the air about, you know, that's what they're doing. They're using these guys. They've got ringers in there, and they're acting like Trump supporters, and they may be spouting the same platitudes, but where a Trump supporter would spout those platitudes, a Trump supporter's not thinking about going up and bag-tagging some cop with a brick. Or bashing somebody, you know, bashing some law enforcement type on the head when he's not looking. And then who gets blamed? Because who's the majority of people in town? Trump people. Like I talked with Hal last night, Antifa and BLM have not been on vacation just because we haven't heard of them. They have been working. They have been looking at how they performed in their demonstrations and their protests and the domestic terrorism that they practiced over the summer. They critiqued those exercises. They came up with more effective tactics, or tactics they think will be, and they're trying them out now. I think this is one of them. But there are going to be people who believe that this is those, you know, those God loving, gun clinging gay, hating, illegal immigrant, racist, bigoted, Nazi, goose-stepping, whatever. You get the idea. Misogynistic, paternalists, or whatever. If the past is any... Yeah, these people are pissed off, man. I'm pissed off, too. Because we know, all right? We know that we know. And if we want to get really Jackie Gleason on this whole thing, they know that we know we know. And we know that they know we know we know. And they know we know that we know we know we know we know. You know? So, yeah, we're jacked up, man. A lot of people are. I mean, it spills over, this tension, this anxiety, this whole condition where we've been since election night, waiting on the other shoe to drop, fearing the worst, preparing for the worst, hopefully. dreading its arrival. Well, it looks like it's here. Now, everything's not over. They were running through the vote certification, and when... Oh, yeah, and I'm sure it was Trump supporters that came and were not going to be denied access to their buildings. I'm sure of that. I'm sure of that. It's difficult. They say that some windows were broken, and that was part of the breach, as they called it. Is it really a breach? Were they storming anything? Or were there just enough guys up there that said, no, you're not going to lock these doors. You're not going to lock our doors, and we're coming in. We're not going to be denied. We're not going to be redirected. We're not going to be stonewalled. And guess what? They weren't. Now, I want to say this. And we all, man, we've all been agitated. We've all been anxious. We've all been ticked off. Like I said, we've been in this constant state of waiting on the other shoe to drop, knowing the potential for how bad that shoe could be when it falls. But even with that, there are mechanisms within the Constitution. And I wish I'd have talked to Hal about some of this last night. He only had so much time, and I think we made wise use of it. And he was really gracious with it as well. And if you're listening, Hal, thanks again. We really appreciate that. What? And again, like I said, they're going to come back. And I got a feeling that after all is said and done and the debate is done, but what I was talking about, we have these mechanisms, we have these avenues of pursuit, these sources where we can seek remedy and redress in the Constitution that I think fundamentally precludes the need for any violence. And I'm going to say it right now. I am not going to lend my voice to any type of violence, to advocate beyond hanging a bunch of traitors. Let me qualify that. I will hang a traitor now, but I don't do violence. I don't like violence. But what's going on? I mean, I'm not gonna advocate this. I'm not gonna sanction it. And besides, I don't really think that this violence that's being carried on is being committed by us. I really don't. I just look at all these years, 5 years, MAGA rallies. We'll go back to the Tea Party. So, 10 years, MAGA rallies, Tea Party rallies, no violence, no crap laying around, no vandalism, nobody got hurt, no property got damaged. Like I said, hell, there wasn't even any litter. And these same people, admittedly, having reached the saturation point where they said, you know what, we're going. We need to send the message. These people need to know. We know where they are. Okay, we know where you work, dude. We know where you're at. And as it stands now, at least maybe 1.5, 2.5 million more people know exactly where you're at. I bet a lot of them are from your district, Congressman, Senator Noballs, whoever you may be. And they're going to look at you and they're going to take note of where you stand on this issue. And I'll tell you this, Senator Noballs, they're going to have a long memory. And it doesn't have to be that long. 2022 is right around the corner. So to counter, because we got to have just a little, you know, just at least about halfway some feng shui here in terms of our harmony. I have Steve Scalise, and I don't know if you guys remember Steve Scalise. He's a representative from, he's House of Representatives from Alabama, and he was part of the Republican softball team. At the end of the year, Labor Day weekend, the Republicans and the Democrats in the House of Representatives get together and have a big softball game. And it's supposed to be, you know, the bipartisan fellowship and, you know, yeah, politics, but we're Americans. And, you know, if we can play ball together this way with, you know, an actual ball, then maybe we ought to be able to play ball together, you know, figuratively in politics, in our dealings with one another as we try to steer this ship of state. It was a Bernie Sanders supporter. I can't remember the guy's name. James Crazy Dude. And he went that day to the ball field where the Republican representatives, congressmen were practicing, and he started shooting at him. Steve Scalise was seriously wounded. Survived those wounds, and we hear from him today. Let's see here. Need to get down here into the S's for fraud. No, I'm just kidding, man. It's for Steve Scalise. Come on, you know what I'm talking about. Give me a break. Steve Scalise, speech on fraud. See, I told you it was under the S. About a 5-minute clip. Pretty good one, too. Remember this day, folks. Seriously. Remember this day. This is, you know, this is like the Boston Massacre, the Tea Party, or Lexington and Concord. I mean, we're not exactly sure just what effect, even midterm, let alone long term, this is going to have. These events are going to have. This window of time, this 4 or 5 year period. Here's Steve Scalise.
I rise today to object to a number of states that did not follow the constitutional requirement for selecting electors. Madam Speaker, this is something that is clear that our founding fathers debated about as a fundamental decision of how we choose our president. There was a lot of back and forth. If anyone reads the founding documents of our country about the different versions they went through to ultimately come up with a process where each state has elections, each state has a process for selecting their electors and sending them to Washington. And Madam Speaker, in a number of those states, that constitutional process was not followed. And that's why we're here to object. If you look at what the requirement says, nowhere in Article 2, Section 1 does it give the Secretary of State of a state that ability. Nowhere does it give the governor that ability. Nowhere does it give a court that ability. It exclusively gives that ability to the legislatures. And in fact, in most states, that's the process that was followed. But for those states that this wasn't followed, unfortunately, this is not new. We've seen over and over again more states where the Democrat Party has gone in and selectively gone around this process. That has to end, Madam Speaker. We have to follow the constitutional process. Now, there might be reasons why some people don't like the process laid out by a legislative body. Madam Speaker, I served on one of those legislative bodies when I was in the state legislature for 12 years. I served on the House and Governmental Affairs Committee where we wrote the laws for our state's elections. And I can tell you, when we had to make changes, those were extensively negotiated. We would have people on both sides come, Republicans and Democrats, Madam Speaker, would get together to work through those changes, any minute change to how a precinct would function, to how a change would be made in the time of an election, signature requirements, all the many things that involve a clerk carrying out the duties in each parish, in our case. You would see people come and give testimony. Madam Speaker, both sides could come. Clerks of court were there in the hearing rooms. It was an open process, by the way, not behind closed doors in a smoke-filled room where somebody might want to bully a Secretary of State to get a different version that might benefit them or their party or their candidate. That's not what our founding fathers said is the process. Maybe it's how some people wanted to carry it out, but they laid out that process. And so when we would have to make those changes, they were in public view. They were heavily debated. And then ultimately, those laws were changed in advance of the election so everybody knew what the rules were. People on both sides knew how to play the rules before the game started, not getting somewhere in the process and saying, well, you don't think it's going to benefit you, so you try to go around the Constitution. That's not how our system works. It's gotten out of hand. And so President Trump has called this out, and President Trump has stood up to it. So many of us have stood up to it. And in fact, over 100 of my colleagues, Madam Speaker, asked the Supreme Court to address this problem just a few weeks ago. And unfortunately, the court chose to punt. They didn't answer it one way or the other. They didn't want to get in the middle of this discussion. We don't have that luxury today. We have to discuss this. We have to fix this. In fact, on our first full day of this Congress, many of us brought legislation onto the House floor to start fixing the problems with our elections, to restore integrity to the election process, which has been lost by so many millions of Americans. And we had a vote. Every single Republican voted to reform the process. Every single Democrat voted against it. They don't want to fix this problem. But the Constitution is our guide. And it's time we start following the Constitution. It's time we get back to what our founding fathers said is the process for selecting electors. That's the legislatures. And public view, not behind closed doors, not smoke-filled rooms, not bullying somebody that might give you a better ruling. Let's get back to rule of law and follow the Constitution, Madam Speaker. And I yield back the balance of my time.
Chairman's time has expired. For what purpose does the gentlewoman?
Hurrah, I said. Hurrah. I didn't get a hurrah sound that man over there. Better watch it.
I know your pain. I know you're hurt. We had an election that was stolen from us. It was a landslide election, and everyone knows it, especially the other side. But you have to go home now. We have to have peace. We have to have law and order. We have to respect our great people in law and order. We don't want anybody hurt. It's a very tough period of time. There's never been a time like this where such a thing happened, where they could take it away from all of us, from me, from you, from our country. This was a fraudulent election, but we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special. You've seen what happens. You see the way others are treated that are so bad and so evil. I know how you feel, but go home and go home in peace.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June. I said that's life.
That's life.
As funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. but I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
I tell you, I can't deny it. I thought of quitting, baby, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. And if I didn't think it was worth one single try, I'd jump right on a big bird and then I'd fly. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself laying flat on my face, I just pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
That's life. And I can't deny it. Many times I thought of cutting out, but my heart won't buy it. But if there's nothing shaking, come this here July, I'm gonna roll myself up in a big ball and die. My.
Brethren and sisters, be seated.
Gather around me, everybody. Gather around me while I preach some. Feel a sermon coming on me. The topic will be sin, and that's what I'm against. If you wanna hear my story, then saddle back and just sit tight while I start reviewing the attitude of doing right. You got to accent. Accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You got to spread joy up to the maximum. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looked so dark? Man, they said we better accent. She went to positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In-Between. Just when everything looks so dark.
ain't the positive, elim. Mine ain't the negative, and latch on to the affirmative.
Don't mess with Mr. In-Between.
No,
don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You got to act,
yes,
yes. You ain't the positive, elim. Mine ain't the negative, and latch on,
yes,
to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between.
No, don't mess with Mr. In-Between.
Ah, well, I don't know about you guys, but I kind of needed that, to be honest with you. I'm not exactly sure. I should have been, instead of singing along with Johnny Mercer, I probably should have been looking to see what the status is with Trump. Protesters destroy media crews, camera equipment. Maybe that was some of our guys, maybe not. Donald Trump says, these are the things and events that happen when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots who have been badly and unfairly treated for so long. These are the things and events that happen when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots who have been badly and unfairly treated for so long. Well, you know what? Daggone him, he's right. And again, now, I am not advocating violence in any fashion. Other than hanging the traitors. You know, we talk about that. But we got to give them a fair, they have to have a fair trial before, you know, we can give them a fair hanging. So, but beyond that, okay, beyond the statutorily sanctioned violence that should be meted out to traitors, one and all, beyond that, going out here, and like I said, committing property violence or committing physical violence, No, I'm against that. I think that any Donald Trump supporter is against that. But as I said last night, and I'm going to say this again, I reject any kind of violence when it comes to this sort of thing. Protest, absolutely. Civil disobedience, oh yes. I reject the violence. I rebuke it. In no way do I advocate it. However, that being said, and I mean it, that's very important that I said that because I want that understood very clearly. But now that we understand that, I also understand it. I understand it very deeply. Again, I am not advocating violence in any fashion, any way. Not vandalism, not physical violence on other people. No violence. But I do understand it. And I think it's only natural that on a number of levels, it resonates with me. And it resonates positively. Sometimes the thirst for justice can be delayed and frustrated and sandbagged and stonewalled to where we forget about our thirst for justice and we hunger for revenge. That can be a problem. As I said earlier, there are mechanisms within the Constitution and within the political framework as it exists even now where steps can be taken and we can try to rectify this situation. I'm not saying it's an easy job, but we have to. We had to anyway, whether Donald Trump was elected or not. We don't know yet. Since 2008, for 12 years, the middle class of this nation, you and I, and not just the white middle class, although they're targeted specifically because I guess, you know, we're an easy target. But it's not just the white middle class. It's the black middle class. It's the Latino middle class. It's the Asian middle class. It is all of us in the middle class, not just white people, everybody. Carries the burden, the largest burden in taxes. And we have been vilified. We've been beaten up. We've been taken advantage of. And yeah, Democrat middle classers, you too. You want to talk about all of us being in something together as the middle class? That is something where we are all in together. And there are people out there who don't like us. The people in the upper class, they don't dig us at all. They see us as a threat. They see us as a threat to them because we're too close. We're in between them and the really, really poor. We're like a firewall. They should be glad we're here, but they're not. They don't like us. They want to be rich and they want everybody else to be poor. And not just the middle class in this next issue, but all of us, not just white people, all of us. I'm here. It's not dead air. These people, in addition to despising us, and don't tell me they don't, they do. The elites in this country despise us. The news media elites, the political elites, the entertainment elites, they hate us. They're happy to take our money and our viewership and our votes and our magazine and newspaper subscription money and our cable carriage fees, but they hate us. And that's where the Democrat middle class comes in. They hate you too. You're not in that club any more than we are, pal. Except you're paying dues, we don't, in the form of votes, and we don't. We pay our dues to Republicans in name only, who are no different than the Democrats that are screwing you over, that are screwing us over. We pay our dues to them. And here's the problem. We can't do that anymore. Mitch McConnell is a Republican. He's supposed to be one of our guys. He's a crook, man. He is every much in the pocket of Red China as Joe and Hunter Biden. And don't tell anybody any different either. Don't let anybody tell you anything. He's just as big a crook as Joe Biden. He's just as big a crook as Nancy Pelosi and her family. And that goes back to the DeLisandrios in Baltimore. Her dad was Tom DeLisandrio. He was the mayor of Baltimore. He was a huge crook. She's no damn different. Not dead air, I'm here. At the end of the interview last night when I was talking with Helmer Rose, we got on the subject of his books, and he is a prolific author. And his newest book is called The Long Dark Winter. And And it's not a particularly optimistic story. And it doesn't have a particularly optimistic outcome. Because what I believe is going to happen, what I fear, and what we've got to guard so vigilantly against is any further erosion of our ordered liberties that the Constitution and therefore our founders bequeathed us. And you want to talk about some cats that are anti-liberty? Look at Democrats all over the country in terms of their response to the pandemic. Look at de Blasio and what he's doing in New York. Look at what that murdering son of a bitch Cuomo did to the nursing homes in New York. The same thing with that, with Tom Wolf, with Murphy in New Jersey. Tom Wolf in Ohio. Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. Gavin Newsom in California. Ralph Northam in North Carolina. Pritzker out in Illinois. Name a town, name a Democrat-controlled state, and look what they do. It's cracked down like you cannot believe. Not dead air. I'm still here just thinking it over. What must we be prepared for? I don't know. We still don't know which way this is going to go. We still don't know because I don't think Congress has reconvened yet. They were evacuated from the Capitol as the citizens came to let a little sunlight into that chamber. It's going to take, and I've been trying to look at this, and I haven't. Haven't done well with it. There are positives. Should the worst, even should the worst happen, and we get Biden and Harris in there, and. Georgia went to the Democrats, they think. I don't know if they've called that one yet, but whether those two cats won or not, they're going to be declared the winner. What I've been trying to do is look at the aggregate of positives, and what I'm talking, and there are a lot of them. I mean, and nobody, you know, they downplay this all the time. They never give the president the proper credit that he deserves. The guy came, he told us what he was going to do, and then he did it. We're going to build a wall. He started building the wall. We're going to get rid of these ridiculous restrictions. We're going to ease the tax burden on these. He did it. We're going to look at prison reform. And too many black guys in prison looks apparently unjustly due to Joe Biden, by the way. And the sentencing guidelines that he sponsored back in the 90s. So he comes in, he tells us exactly what he's going to do. It's why we vote for him. And then he turns around and does it. And there are going to be positives. There are going to be positives. I think what we've seen in the last 4 years, I don't know what kind of legs it has, what kind of stamina that it has, but I think that in this country there has lain fundamentally dormant for a long time a great sleeping Gojira. That's right. The apex predator, the king of the monsters, a conservative Gojira. And he's been laying dormant. He's been trying to sleep, but they keep poking him. And they keep making noise. And they keep treating him like he's dead and not sleeping. And one day, I really do think one day, they're gonna push, and it's going to be soon. I really do think it's going to be soon. I really do. And they're going to wake up to this. You get the idea. Okay, it's going to be. And that giant conservative Gojira is going to step up. And when he stands up and towers over these people, it's going to be one gigantic, spontaneous poop. They're going to look up. And like I said, they're going to hear that roar. The ground is going to shake under them where he takes that massive Gojira first step. And it's going to be on. It's over. That is one of the positives that I think we have. I really do. I think that, and I'm not exactly. It's been in the making for a long time. I mean, I think it, certainly ever since the first Obama administration, and what we saw with the attempts of what they were trying to do in bringing us to socialism. Marxism, totalitarianism, and it was in that time frame, in those two administrations of Barack Obama, that the noise was starting to make, and the giant was beginning to stir. And then, you know, Donald Trump comes along and sets the political world on its ass collectively. Never seen anything like him. You know, that they hate and fear him just as they hate and fear us. And that's the thing. That's the thing we don't talk about. We know they hold us in contempt. We know they hate our guts. We know that they look at us with disdain, with disgust, with distaste. They are dyspeptic and dysfunctional. I love alliteration. Anyway, they do. They hate our guts. They despise us. They loathe us. But more importantly than any of those things, they fear us. They fear you and I. That's what we've got to capitalize on. That's what we have to exploit. And do you know why they fear us? That's a simple one. There's a hell of a lot more of us than there are of them. Our name is Legion, for we are many. And they know that. They know that better than we do. They know what we innately, yet inherently, stand for. And they hate and fear that as well. And we've got to work quickly on ways to exploit that fear, to capitalize on it. We've got to find a way to make them see fear as the overriding emotion. We can do that. We did it today. What did we do? We showed up. We made arrangements to meet, and we showed up. And what did they do? They hauled ass for the exit. That's what they did. That's the lesson for today. It's the lesson that we must never, ever forget. It's a lesson that we must not ever be unmindful of. Yeah, they hate, they dread, they loathe, they despise, whatever. They also fear us. I think that this conservative awakening, I'm not talking about Mitch McConnell, I'm talking about rhinos, I'm not talking about posers or phonies, I'm not talking about the members of the Uniparty, I'm not talking about Hydra. And like I said, that cat McConnell, he's Hydra all the way, and he has been for a long time. But I guarantee you, even though they won't say it, and they may put up brave faces in front of the news cameras when they're finally released from their secure yet undisclosed location, they got scared. The Uniparty and Hydra got scared today. Were they scared at BLM? Were they scared of Antifa? No, probably not. You know why? Because those guys are nothing compared to us. Those guys are nothing compared to a genuinely and righteously indignant and angry and irate citizenry or an electorate. And what they saw today, I guarantee you, scared them to death. Now, I really don't know what that means. I know that it's going to definitely set them back to where they think a little bit. Now, what they think, I don't know. Given what we know about them, my guess is they would think about how's the safest way for them to double down and put the quietus on us at the same time and keep us under their thumb. They're not going to think about, well, gee whiz, you know, maybe we're wrong about this. Maybe we need to, you know. And I think that there's going to be a reckoning amongst the Democrat Party is still in disarray, and they will be, because it's fractured. It's been fractured for years. And Joe Biden is not the guy. Joe Biden is not the charismatic leader that's going to bring the Democrat Party together. They're going to continue to split. They're going to continue to be at odds with one another. And again, the people that are waiting in the wings, the Ocasio-Cortezes, the Pete Buttigieges, the Amy Klobuchars, the Raul Castro, the Julian Castros, the Cory Bookers, these cats are communists. We talked about Buttigieg the other night and his dad, Joe Buttigieg, who was probably one of the probably the United States' foremost authority on Antonio Gramsci. And Antonio Gramsci is the guy who is the proponent of Gramscian communism. And the form of communism that Gramsci spoke about is what we see today. We see a concerted effort by the media, by news sources, by the churches in a lot of places where they're slowly cultivating appeal or at least acceptance of socialism, which is acceptance of communism. That's what's waiting in the wings when they boot Nancy Pelosi out, when they get rid of Bernie Sanders, when they get rid of Dianne Feinstein, of Charles Schumer, is what happens today, I mean, either good, bad, or indifferent, is what happens today the events. And really, these events, you know, it's a culmination of a lot of different things. They've been doing this since the guy came down the escalator and said, you know what, I'm running for president. Country needs some help. I think I can do better than this guy. I think I can help us get back to our position of preeminence. And I'm running. They've had him zeroed in ever since. And this is the culmination of all those things. In terms of threats, existential threats to the United States, is the corruption of our election and the installation of these two fakes, these two charlatans, these two know-nothings, these two duds. Biden is a three-time loser who is beyond cognitive twilight. His vice president, the second in command of the United States military, and a major influencer on the Democrat Party as a rule, couldn't even win her own state, couldn't win her home state in a primary. She exited the presidential campaign with, like, I think maybe a plus 1%, maybe. These are the people that are going to hold this splintered, fractious Democrat Party together. No, what they're going to do is they are going to appease the loudest radical Marxist voices. That's what they're going to do. Again, violence is unacceptable in any form. Property violence, physical violence, it is unacceptable. It is unwarranted. And again, I can only point to the Tea Party. All the MAGA rallies of the last 4 years, no issues of violence. No issues of vandalism, no issues of litter, no issues. All those times, and there were probably more opportunities in those events to wreak havoc should they have decided to do so than what they got in D.C. Oh, and then, by the way, we were talking about the Reichstag thing, using these people as a ruse. I was talking to Hal Moroz about that. He agreed, and then I got an email from our friend Michael Cutler. Let me see if I can find it here. Mike, where you at, buddy? He apparently sent me an article. I'm sure it's one of his. Oh, no, it's Lorraine Bosano. But anyway, it's the article about, you know, how they did it. How they pulled off the Reichstag fire, the Nazis, and used that to propel themselves to power. I simply do not, as angry as they may be, and I know they are, man. They've been disenfranchised. They have been. For years, we've been vilified. We've been marginalized. We've been called stupid. We've been called empty-headed. Everything. We've been called racist. We've been called homophobic. We've been called xenophobic. We've been called transphobic, whatever the hell that is. Islamophobic. But if there was violence and mischief committed today, and there was, obviously, a woman lost her life inside the Capitol building when she got shot, presumably by security or someone, or the Capitol Police, someone. Because things got out of control. People were nervous. And when things get out of control and people get nervous, somebody winds up getting hurt, and that's what happened here. But we're gonna remove that incident because that will be investigated, and we'll see exactly what happened there. I'm sure of it. But I just don't see it. But again, these guys are scared half to death. We scared the living daylights out of them today. When they would not be denied entrance to the house. Our house. Not dead air, I'm just kind of processing all this junk. We're going to have to be vigilant. We're going to have to be vigilant now more than ever. We're also going to have to be informed. We're going to have to work assiduously at disseminating information, making sure we got the right story, and making sure everybody knows it for as long as we can. Will it be the long, dark winter that Judge Moroz was talking about? Potentially. Again, I know I'm kind of sounding pessimistic, but we still don't know how this is going to go. We really don't. They haven't convened. Congress hasn't reconvened to take up the vote. I know that they're probably still doing some like street cleaning. Most of the people have left. Most of the people have followed the president's instructions. And I think that was absolutely right what he did. The point was made. If we want you, we know where you're at. And now, you know, and none of us are going to have any trouble getting there, especially now that we have a system worked out. Over the last 4 years, to be sure, but within this last campaign cycle, there has come to the forefront of the country's consciousness a number of things that we need to look at, a number of seminal issues. And we're going to have to assess these situations and these issues rather quickly. Now, we can't really make too many mistakes. We've got to go ahead and look at them, figure out what we're going to do, and then implement our plan. See, here's the thing. The Democrats, the left, the Marxist left, the communist left, they never sleep, man. They never rest. They never stop. They're never complacent because, you know, they're so psychologically, you know, it's just so deeply embedded in them to acquire and consolidate power. It's never ending. It's a never-ending acquisition of power, and it's continuously being consolidated and brought together. I think that's about all we're going to do tonight, guys. I think that, you know, we're going to have to watch this thing unfold, and we'll be back here tomorrow night talking about it again. Tomorrow night also marks the return of our pal Mark Hoffman, El Guapo, the handsome one himself, will be back with us at Patriot Nation Radio Live at 8 o'clock. We have been doing this for a long time, me and Mark. And it has got to be, for a guy I have never met in my life. I know what he looks like. We talk all the time. We have for 6 years. We've been doing this for 6 years now. To have never met Mark, it is probably the most enjoyable and smooth-running working relationship I've ever had in my life, man. We've been together for 6 years now. We were at another place. And it was just a little squirrely, and Mark had this, and he split, and he said, why don't you come on? And I said, you know what, let's go. And we did. And here we are, killing it. And like I said, we brought our brother Gary in. United Patriots Uprising was on Monday night, and it was terrific, a terrific show. He'll be on not next Monday night, but the Monday night after. And, you know, it's going to be a barn burner as well. Gary Benford, United Patriots Uprising, every other Monday here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Ordinarily, this program, A Conservative's Perspective, is on Tuesdays and Thursdays live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But every now and then, special stuff happens, and I have the opportunity and no other life besides this. So when something happens, I can flip the switch and be here, and we can BS about it. Ordinarily, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m., also, a recorded version of the program that goes out on the Mojo 50 radio network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you really should be, because it is some of the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio. Thank you very much for the opportunity to hang tight. We do live in interesting times. And they are trepidatious times as well. They are uncertain times. But we have faced trepidation and uncertainty before as a nation and as a people, and we have prevailed. And I believe that this instance, what's going on, no matter what happens, no matter how this turns out, the American people can and will prevail, and they will prevail because of you. We're growing. More and more people, it seems like, are listening all the time, and I'm really grateful for that. Tell your friends, please, you know, if you would, tell your friends, share the program, share information about United Patriots Uprising, share information about Patriot Nation Radio and A Conservative's Perspective. Turn people on. Bring us in. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm going to get off of here, you guys. Be back in here tomorrow, 7 p.m. 7 p.m. It's only going to be an hour show tomorrow night, because at 8 o'clock, of course, we have the return of the mighty El Guapo to the airwaves. And what a tremendous, what in the nick of time moment is there than that? And we're happy to have him back. God bless you. God bless America. And we'll be back here tomorrow evening taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, take good care of yourselves, and we'll see you later.